Hello and welcome to another episode of From the Basement Bar podcast, week 8, actually, to be specific. Wow, I can't believe I'm already saying week 8 of this season. It is just absolutely flying by, and so are the L's in the win column of a few former undefeated teams. I mean, what an electric past football weekend we just had. How will we ever top that? I'm not sure if the bedlam that we witnessed in Knoxville, Tennessee will ever be topped for the rest of this season, but it's college football, and more lunacy is always waiting just around the corner. Also, it's starting to get fucking cold. The temps feel like they have just rapidly dropped off. It won't be long before we start viewing some of these northern and midwestern games with a little white powder on the field. I, for one, am not a fan of any temperature below, let's say, about 58 degrees. I think 58 degrees is the perfect middle ground, perfect hot spot right below that. That's the low bar temperature for me, personally. Anything below that, and after a few minutes, and you're outside, and you're like, wait, it's actually kind of cold. Once you start dipping, you know, closer and closer to that 50-degree mark, that's when the old twins below the belt start to tighten up and inch their way back up for some warmth. Now, you know, anything 58 and up, I mean anything above, all the way up to, you can give me 120 in the desert heat, and you will hear zero complaints out of my mouth. Just give me heat all day, any day. I refuse to complain about it. It's one thing that I'll never do. I don't complain about heat ever. And that's because I am fully aware of how miserable, and I mean miserable, I am when I'm cold. And it doesn't even come close to the mood, my mood, when I'm in extreme heat. So the appreciation for the sun has my full gratitude. Give me this baking hot sun. I can't do the cold weather. I truly never need to see another snowflake in my life unless it's through a dollar bill. Don't get me wrong. Watching a snow game is beautiful. The scenery, everything about that, that feels right. When I'm watching it on my TV screen, that is. And I do admit, when that happens, it does feel like true football. But damn it, I'll never be able to get around the uncomfortable feeling of being cold. It just won't happen. I've lived in a cold climate my entire life, and I have not gotten used to it an ounce. It makes even the smallest tasks in your daily life that much worse. Like, I already hate dragging the trash out to the front of my driveway. I just hate doing that. I only have to do it once a week. I know I'm bitching here, but I hate doing that chore. Now, I have to bundle up in full armor just to walk outside my house for about a minute or two to drag the trash and the recycling out. You know, at that point, if a serial killer wants me, which I always take my trash out late at night, not sure if I should be saying that out loud, but if a serial killer wants me in this cold taking my trash out, he would just be putting me out of my misery anyway. And I'm sure there will be a few people calling me a pussy, but that is fine with me. You know, you can pretend all you want to be some big bad dude and not be cold, but we know damn well that you are shivering just like the rest of us. It reminds me of this kid in high school. I feel like there's just always this one person. There's always somebody, you know, in every school. The kid just, no matter what the temperature, it could be 17 degrees outside, wind chill of -2. This kid only wore shorts. I don't think he possessed pants ever. Like, I don't think that was in his house. Like, he was never in a possession of some type of pants. Ever. Because he only wore shorts, and he thought he was badass for only wearing shorts. Now, I saw his pasty white legs all through the winter, and I know he was fucking cold. I know he was fucking cold. It's just, if you're not cold, something's wrong with you. But it's people like that, like, you know, if you want to be cold, if you want to be uncomfortable, just to prove that you are tougher than me, you go right ahead. I'm going to have some freaking warmers in there. I'm going to have some liners underneath my pants. I'm going to double up on the socks. Now, I double up on the socks. That's the big move. If you go to a cold weather football game and you're not doubling up on socks, maybe throwing a little heat warmer into the shoes, you're an amateur. You got to do that. That's the move. Double up on socks, throw some liners underneath your pants. put those boots on there, bundle up. If you're going to be in the cold, I'm bundling up. I'm not going to be unprepared because, damn it, I'm not going to be cold. That's the worst time. So I know that kid wearing shorts every single day to school thought he might have been cool, but we thought he was just an idiot because we know he's cold. We know he's cold. And even if you're not, what does that even mean? Does that mean, what is the point being proven here? I don't know. It's nuts. It was just nuts to me. But you know what does warm me up? Outside of bundling up, throwing on those two pairs of socks, you know what does warm me up is this week's drink of choice from behind the basement bar. And we're back on our wine bullshit. We're back on our, it felt like a few weeks where we were not, I was just out of wine, honestly. And I went and grabbed a few bottles today because I was craving it. And you know I always go white. I haven't had this before. It's a Pinot Grigio, Da Vinci Pinot Grigio, with a little picture of Da Vinci, but that kind of looks like a chick. Don't think Da Vinci was that feminine. I don't. But it's pretty good. 12.5% alcohol. It was a little expensive for my taste. I've had cheaper wine taste just as good, if not better, but it's solid. It's got a little weird of a smell to it though, which really bothers me. You know, I'm one of those people that food, drinks, anything with like an odd smell, or if the food has a weird texture, I don't care how good it tastes. If you give me a weird texture, it's gone. It's not going to work for me. And it's not going to work for me. And this wine, now that I fucking say it, it's just, I don't know. It smells like mildew. Maybe it's my cup. Maybe my cup's dirty. I don't know. I'll smell the bottle. Smell the bottle. The bottle can't be dirty. No, it's the wine. It's like a mildewy smell. That's going to fucking bother me. Yeah. We have some people coming over this weekend, so I'll offer them the rest of this bottle. Get this fucking smell out of my nose. Jesus. All right. I'm going to have to finish this quick. I'm going to gag. All right. But, let's move on. So let's do a quick peek back at the week that was, and what a week it was. It was a damn good weekend. So it's worth our time to spend a little bit of this podcast talking about what occurred last weekend. Just wild scenes, great upsets, good games, teams, you know, no longer undefeated. Some pretty big games that could have some real ramifications for the rest of this season, especially the playoffs. And my pick, you know, for that Pac-12, which we discussed last week, is looking better after this past weekend. It's looking better. We're going to find out a lot more coming up here, but it's looking pretty damn good. So let's just take a peek back. And the first game, obviously, that comes to my mind was Bedlam in Rocky Top. Rockin' Rocky Top. I'm not sure I've ever seen it like that in my life. Like, ever. And I don't know if we'll ever see Tennessee going off the way they did. Finally getting a win against Alabama after like 15 years of just L's. They get the W, and in dramatic fashion, with one of the ugliest knuckleball field goal wins I've ever seen. And you didn't even realize it, actually, until you watched the replay from behind the goalpost. If you haven't seen it, you got to go see how close this knuckleball field goal almost did not make it. It was a few feet. It looked like, when you look at it straight on from behind the kicker, it looked like it made it with decent amount of coverage there. But no, when you're behind there, and I can't imagine, you know, if you were one of those fans right there behind that goalpost, or you know, one of those security guards, one of the cheerleaders back there, that ball looked like it was not going to make it. That was pretty insane getting that cool view from the back there. But Tennessee, wow. You know, I said last week, I said a 75% Bryce Young would beat Tennessee. Bryce Young was definitely more than 75%, and they did not beat Tennessee. Tennessee beat Alabama, and they beat and Alabama was just sloppy again. They beat another sloppy Alabama team, which we've seen this entire season. It was another week of sloppy Alabama play. They're getting penalized at the highest clip, one of the worst penalized teams in the entire conference. It's just sloppy football, and it's not something we've come accustomed to from a Nick Saban coached team. But Tennessee, they just hit big play after big play. It was home run hitters. I mean, it was pretty impressive, the explosive plays that they were able to generate after taking hits from Alabama. You know, Alabama, that offense was moving. Bryce Young had 455 yards. They were moving. Gibbs, that guy looks like he's gliding when he's carrying the ball. I mean, he's clear and away the best running back in the SEC. Just smoothness, he's right up there with like a Bijan Robinson. I think Bijan Robinson's better running back overall. But Gibbs, Jahmyr Gibbs, man, he just looks like he's gliding. He is. Alabama just replenishes backs year after year, and it seems like they get better somehow, which is just mind-blowing and just unfair, basically. But they find these running backs, and they produce, and they just look so natural. Like, he was born to carry a football on a football field. That's what Gibbs just is, the epitome of just smooth, just gliding across the grass. It's great to watch, but it just wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for the explosive plays of Hendon Hooker, who is making a real case for the Heisman Trophy. But him and Jalin Hyatt, what a monster day for Hyatt. Just an absolute, just ridiculous 207-yard day, explosiveness off the charts. I mean, anytime you looked up, the guy was going for a touchdown. He had fucking five of them. He had six catches. Five of them for touchdowns. Like, an unbelievable career day. He'll never do that again. And if he does, we're talking top five draft pick. But, I mean, now his numbers for the year look pretty freaking good now. 595 yards, 10 touchdowns, 18 yards per catch. That's helped out a lot from a 34.5-yard average in this past game on six receptions and five of them going for touchdowns. Just unbelievable day. And then the celebration after. Jeez, man. That's what college football is all about. Carrying the, they tore down the goalpost and then just carrying it off the field. People have it in pieces. There's pictures all over Instagram. Some dudes, I mean, they just pieced it up, and dudes have them in their dorms, have them in their frats. It was a pretty cool scene. They got fined $100,000 from the SEC for storming that field. And the president or the athletic director was happy to pay that bill. There's actually a good video of him when they were tearing down the goalposts, and he's there holding a cigar, and a person asked him, you know, what do you think about them tearing down the goalposts? And he's like, that's fine with me. We can do this every year. That's the way to handle it. That's the way to handle it. It was a cool scene. And like I said, I don't think we're ever going to see, for this year at least, I don't think we're going to top the bedlam that occurred at Rocky Top this past weekend. So, good for Tennessee. I mean, they're setting up a big clash with Georgia. Big clash with Georgia to see who the class of the SEC East and of the SEC Conference in general is. Moving on. God, that was a good game. But moving on, we had, Clemson, Florida State. Florida State made this final score look close, but that game really wasn't that close. Florida State is who we thought they were the whole year. They're a pretty mediocre team that's going to show some flashes. That's about it. But Clemson continues their win and dominance of the ACC. The other big, probably the second biggest clash of the day, at least, you know, going into the day. I honestly did not think this was going to be a close game, and it didn't turn out to be a close game. But Michigan just absolutely dominated Penn State. They proved, like I said, Penn State's probably getting geared up for that second half slump, that second half of the season slump, which could ultimately, you know, do in James Franklin and finally cause the exit in Happy Valley if they have another second half of the season slump, which I believe was just started this past weekend when Michigan's offensive line just absolutely trucked them. Blake Corum, Edwards, I mean, it was just a manhandling of Penn State's defense. Both running backs going off. Donovan Edwards actually outrushed Blake Corum, which is ridiculous. I think Blake had like 166 and then Edwards 173. J.J. McCarthy didn't need to do shit. That offensive line churned out 400 yards of rushing offense against Penn State, who had no answer. It was an embarrassment, and we knew Penn State wasn't that good, and Michigan proved it. But hey, if you can run the ball like that, and you can play good defense, throw a little J.J. McCarthy some, you know, some of his athletic ability, some of his, you know, scratch the surface of stardom type of plays that he'll throw out there from time to time. This Michigan team might be dangerous, more dangerous than last year. It's going to be a fun Ohio State Michigan rivalry game, I believe, later in the season. We had just clashes after clashes of top teams in conference. So USC Utah, I mean, talk about a game. Talk about a game. After Utah was punched in the mouth and I was giving them some shit, you know, for not being as tough as they claimed to be, they went out and in a dogfight with the Trojans, won 43-42. Cam Rising, 415 yards. That guy's slippery. He's just a slippery quarterback. When the defensive lineman gets enough pressure on you, you think, oh, this guy's going down. No, he finds ways. He's more athletic than he looks. And Dalton Kincaid, I mean, we talked about Jalen Hyatt's day. Dalton Kincaid came pretty freaking close. The matchup just wasn't, you know, on the same level. But the dude went for 234 yards and had 16 catches. 16 receptions, one touchdown, 234 yards. That's a day for a tight end. That's a half a season for most tight ends, honestly. It was a big receiving day. It was a big, you know, statistically high output day, all just all around the country in these top matchups. Not SMU, Fresno State bullshit. These are top 10 teams in big clashes that mean something in conference. I don't know how we're going to top this weekend. You know, because then we got the Oklahoma State and TCU game in the Big 12. And I've been saying TCU and Kansas were the class of the Big 12. It was no disrespect to Oklahoma State, but I thought the winner of last weekend's TCU-Kansas game was the true best team in the Big 12. Now, Kansas obviously dropped one again to Oklahoma, who finally bounced back in a big way, and they needed to bounce back in a big way, or it was going to be, you know, a real, real problem for Venables down there. But, you know, they bounced back from scoring 0 points to 52 points. But Kansas is without their starting quarterback. You know, they still put up 42. But back to the TCU Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State was obviously getting more love. They've been the more consistent team throughout the past, you know, decade under Mike Gundy. And they actually, the Derek Mason led defense for Oklahoma State, replacing Knowles, put the clamps Oh, and statistically, TCU was the most explosive offense in the country. Most 20-plus yards, most yards per play attempt. They put the clamps on them early, but that didn't last. Max Duggan, they finally figured it out, and he is an efficient quarterback who I've been high on. I've been super high on Max. I've said that multiple times. The guy can play the game. He's having a phenomenal season. And he didn't even start the year as the starting quarterback for the Horned Frogs. But they win in double OT, 43-40 over Oklahoma State, taking a stranglehold on the Big 12 race. And I'm just going to mention this game. It was the Auburn-Ole Miss game. Ole Miss did win, as they should. But for the first time in a few weeks, the Auburn Tigers, after I was calling for Brian Harsin to be on the simmering hot seat last week, they finally showed some real true effort. It was good to see some effort out of the Auburn Tigers. And Tank Bigsby, he's top five running back in the league, in the country, went for 179. It was good effort against a very good Ole Miss team. NC State Syracuse, I said don't watch that game. I said it's bad football. Syracuse, you know, I was sucked in. I actually started to watch that game. Syracuse has an interesting offense. You know, Garrett Schrader and Sean Tucker, that duo on offense, that rushing duo, what they can do can cause problems. Can cause real problems. Syracuse has an interesting offense. Don't watch NC State. They suck. But Syracuse moving forward, watch some of these Syracuse games. Their offense is interesting. Sean Tucker's good. Garrett Schrader has developed not only as a runner, if you remember him from Mississippi State, a few years ago, I like this Syracuse offense. It's fun to watch, actually. So I hope Syracuse beats Clemson. That's what we need. I mean, that would just fall in line of what we're seeing this year. Mississippi State, Kentucky. I said that was my lock, one of my locks, and I was wrong. I was completely wrong there. Will Levis actually even went out in that game, but he still had a good game. He did have that one bad pick. And Emmanuel Forbes, if you're not paying attention to Emmanuel Forbes, cornerback, Mississippi State, you need to start doing so. He read Will Levis on a quick screen. I think it was gonna turn into a tunnel screen on the wide with the wide receiver there. But Emmanuel Forbes jumped it so cleanly, took it right to the house, kept Mississippi State in that game. It actually looked like Mississippi State might, you know, be turning the tide there, but Kentucky, for the second year in a row, just, you know, suffocated Mike Leach and the Will Rogers-led offense. There was not much going on at all. I watched that entire game twice. Actually, I watched a lot of it live, and then I did two different types of film scouting on that game specifically. So basically, I've seen it three times, and that offense was terrible. They couldn't get anything going. They couldn't generate anything at all. Will Rogers, not a good game for him there. But Kentucky's defense, you know, I said last week, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, they are a true threat to Alabama in the SEC West. I don't think Alabama has a defense as good as Kentucky and the Stoops coach defense. So do they have better talent individually? Probably. I mean, they just have better players. But overall as a unit, Kentucky's defense is very good. So Mississippi State, hopefully they learned something from that. And I think it's kind of Kentucky just has their number. They know how to coach against that team. So I still think Mississippi State will put up numbers against Alabama, but Ole Miss is probably the only true threat as of right now. I think Mississippi State kind of lost that right after this Kentucky performance. And that's it. We don't need to talk about anything else from last week. I mean, Jesus. I wish I could go back and relive it. I wish I, and it was actually perfect. It was a great Saturday. My wife's friend came into town, and they just went out and had like a fall apple picking day, and you know, making apple pies and shit, just completely out of sight, out of mind for me. Took the kid with her. They had themselves a day, so I was able to sit back, crack open some beers, and just enjoy the beauty of what we got to see this past weekend in college football. That's the ideal day. That is the ideal day. So that's last week's brilliance. Last week's brilliance. Oh, I do want to touch on one thing. I was talking some shit. I did say, I remember last week, BYU was going to beat Arkansas. I didn't see KJ Jefferson having a big boy performance like he did. That was the difference. KJ Jefferson back on the scene. I got to commend him. I have to at least get that in there. He had a big boy performance. There was one play where he was supposed to be sacked 3-4 times, and his big body was able to get out of that. I think he actually tweeted out, thank that strength and conditioning coach. It looked like it. You know, he looked strong. It was a big boy performance from KJ Jefferson. Good for Arkansas to get back on the winning track. Good to see him out there. He's been dealing with some injury issues, and they are a different team with Jefferson on the field. So let's go into let's take a sip of this smelly wine here. God, it really does fucking smell. Oh, my God. I don't know what to do about it. Ugh. It's kind of ruining it for me. Well, it is ruining it for me. So, like we started last week, every week I was going to do a scouting report, read off a scouting report. Last week I did the running back. I did Israel Abanikanda. If you missed it, go back and listen to last week's episode. You know, skip forward to about the, 25-minute, 30-minute mark. You probably won't miss it. And just listen from there if you just want to listen to the scouting report. This week I'm doing an offensive lineman, Brett Nylon. USC, it's their center, number 62 on USC. So I don't have my full report complete, but I'm going to read you some of my notes from the games that I've been watching, the All-22 notes that I've taken from the film. I have not just finalized my report, so I don't want to read that yet. But let's just go through some of my notes from what I have viewed from USC's center. And these games are from this year. He's only played center in his career. He is strictly a center. I don't see him translating to any type of, you know, guard or being able to fill in that way at the next level. He just doesn't have experience doing it. But he's a reliable, he's an experienced player at USC. He's played a lot of snaps. And it shows. So some of my notes here, you know, he shows quickness after the snap. He gets off the ball quick. He'll just ground well in pass protection. He is quick enough to get to the edge when he's in a pulling scheme. And he shows good strength when he gets out there on the edge to block off his defenders with decent balance. At one point, I did watch him get off balance, leaning too far forward. You know, he kind of got that weight too far on his toes instead of having those, you know, anchoring down the way he should have, having those solid, sound feet, you know, those quick, choppy feet. And the DT and the defensive tackle just, you know, easily got by him. It didn't affect the play, but it's not something you like to see. When his assignment isn't directly there in front of him, he does a good job of assisting his guards in pass protection and chipping and getting away. He keeps his head on a swivel well, so he always looks aware. He shows very good strength, even against larger defenders, especially when they're on-ball defenders. Now, when the rusher, when a blitzing linebacker or something like that, and they got a full head of steam, he does get knocked off his base and pushed back into the backfield a little bit further than I would like to see. And that actually happened. He identified a blitz pickup very well. However, you know, that blitzing linebacker, he was able to push him around a bit and got into the backfield. Not that he got around him, but, you know, if you push your guy far enough into the backfield, you're going to affect the quarterback. It's going to cause some issues. So you don't want to see that. You want to see him being able to anchor down and not lose, you know, not be pushed back more than 3-4 yards. We really don't want to see anything over that, you know, during the duration of the drop back. He displays good ability to get back on balance after awkward positions, which is a very good sign. You know, some of these, you know, these big linemen, their weight just shifts and they can't bring it back when they get in an awkward position. He does not show that. He shows good balance even in awkward positions. He seems to understand his blocking assignments well. Like I said, he anchors himself almost always in a very solid base in pass protection. He engages quickly with good force in the run game. He's consistently finishing those blocks in the run game, which is something you like to see. That's good effort. He looks comfortable in pulling schemes, which, you know, he did a lot of zone blocking schemes for most of his USC career, but now in the Lincoln Riley, it's split between the gap and zone blocking schemes. So he's getting a good taste of both this year, and he looks comfortable doing it. One thing I don't like to see, and I saw it too much too often, is his hands when he's engaging. He needs to improve his hand engagement when he's going up with a defender. His hands tend to get way too wide on the outside. The defender, you know, he'll have inside leverage, and then, you know, once your hands get out on the outside, especially in the NFL, you're going to start getting holding calls called on you. You're not going to be able to hold that leverage. You know, if you can get right up into the chest plate of the defender, that's where you can control them. You can even get away with some holding in there because nobody can see that. But once your hands are out on the shoulder pads, you're losing your leverage. They're being able to push you back, and you're going to get some holding calls. That needs to be improved. His hands are just much too wide, allowing that inside leverage for the defender to push him around a little bit. But he has the strength to kind of do it in college. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in the NFL. Aaron Donald's going to fucking manhandle that dude if he has his arms wide out on him like that. He's just going to fucking take his arms, put it right in his chest. Like I said, he shows good effort, especially finishing block and run in screen situations. He does get out quickly in screen situations, which we like to see. He gets to that second level at a good pace and blocks well in space. Sometime there was a time where he overran and that defender was able to just kind of shed him real quickly and make the play, which we don't like to see. He keeps his feet moving well, and his weight balance and pass protection stays in a good position. He rarely ever looks out of position. Feet do have a tendency to slow down at times. We want to keep that choppy, you know, quick steps. We want to just hear that. We want to see that. And not when you start slowing your feet down, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to get in trouble, especially at the next level. His strength against bigger rushers is visible. He can absorb that rusher without relinquishing much of his ground. Like I said, that does change slightly on a full head of steam, but you know it's tough to take on any, you know, blitzing linebacker. You're going to be knocked out slightly. We would just like to see him absorb that a little bit better. Let's see here. Keeps his head on a swivel. Shows good awareness. I think I mentioned that. Quick first step. He does a good job of staying in front of the rusher in pass protection. You know, there was this one play where the guy tried like three different, he tried a swim move, he tried a spin move, and he just kept him right there. That's when he kept his feet chopping, kept his hands where they were supposed to be, and just pushed him back, swim move, nah. You know, spin move, pushed him off his back. That was well done. Again, he just displays very good balance. Keeps his head on a swivel. So yeah, those are basically Yeah, and one last, I'll just end. He's constantly looking to help block, you know, when no direct assignment is, when he's not, you know, responsible for some direct assignment right in front of him. But he does this without jeopardizing his position, which is smart. It shows his intelligence there. So yeah, Brett Nylon, USC center, 62, number 62. I think he has a shot at the NFL. Clearly, I mean, you like to see your linemen be able to, you know, play two positions. So, you know, shift out to guard, you know, a tackle that could play guard, something like that. Just gives more versatility, helps out, you know, just to even make the active roster when you have that type of versatility. He is strictly a center, but he does it well. He does his job well, but you are going to lose some of your draft stock when you are just one position guy on the offensive line. But he's an experienced guy, so keep a lookout for him in the upcoming draft later, well, next year, actually. not later this year, next year. So now let's jump to this week's upcoming games. All right. So Ohio State comes off their bye week, and they get Iowa, which, you know, Iowa can in the past has caused problems, but I don't see it this year. Iowa just doesn't have the offense to keep up with C.J. Stroud, Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, that offense is just ridiculous. Iowa's defense is good. They're not, you know, they're not as great as we, you know, they were such a turnover forcing team last year, where it, you know, that really changes dynamics of game. I don't see Iowa being able to keep up with Ohio State this year at all. Not even close. Now we do have that Syracuse Clemson game. This is the one. This could be an upset. I still think Clemson gets it done, but I'm telling you, the Syracuse offense is interesting. It's very interesting with Schrader and Tucker. They're not gonna be an easy team to defend. They're really not. I'm very interested to see if they give Clemson some real issues, because if they do, you know, I'm gonna continue to come around on this Cuse team. You know, maybe it's just because we haven't seen them be good in so long, and, you know, I don't mind seeing a Clemson beat down from time to time. You know, them be beat down, that is. So we'll see. I tune into that game. Tune into that game just to enjoy that Syracuse offense, and see, you know, maybe Clemson stifles them. Maybe Dabo has the game plan. We'll see. Kansas Baylor, that could be solid, but, you know, two unranked teams now in the Big 12. A few weeks ago, that looked like that could be a real, real big clash. Moving on, Ole Miss LSU. They looked pretty good against Florida. I mean, their offense looked very good against Florida last week. I was shocked by how well Jaden Daniels played. I thought Jaden Daniels was about as mediocre, and he probably still is a very mediocre quarterback, but Florida made him look like a Heisman Trophy candidate last week. He could do no wrong, putting up 45 points against a pretty good Florida team, a pretty good Florida defense. Anthony Richardson, he was okay. He's just a roller coaster ride sometimes, but Jaden Daniels was not a roller. He was just up in that game. We'll see if he can do it, because that game could be very high scoring. Ole Miss LSU. I would be very surprised if he can duplicate his performance from last week in the Swamp again with Ole Miss. But Ole Miss, you know, it feels like an Ole Miss loss almost, unless Ole Miss is for real. Unless Ole Miss is for real, LSU could win this game, but let's hope Ole Miss is for real and they are able to provide somewhat of a challenge to Alabama this year. Now, my game of the day, and it's not even close, really, is the UCLA-Oregon game. I've been telling people, stating on this podcast, UCLA is going to win the Pac-12, and I hope they don't make me regret that. I hope they don't make me regret that. And I really don't think Oregon's the biggest test. I do still believe USC is going to be the. I mean, you can't count out Lincoln Riley. You can't count out Caleb Williams, Jordan Addison. That Travis Dye. That's, you know, still feels like a UCLA, USC, Southern California clash for the Pac-12. That feels right. But Oregon, good Bo Nix can show up at any moment. And when good Bo Nix shows up, it is lightning. It is electricity, and he can beat anybody in the country when he's playing at his top level. Now, that doesn't happen consistently enough, so we'll see. And UCLA, that offense, they just have everything going. Chip Kelly is coaching a phenomenal team this year. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, I've been saying how much he has grown on me over the years, and it's coming full circle with his growth as a quarterback. Zach Charbonnet, he's been my guy since last year. Just a powerful back that will punch you in the mouth. He'll make you feel every hit. That offense is going to be tough to beat. I think UCLA beats them by 10+. I think UCLA beats them by 10+. I think Oregon comes out hot at home. It can be a loud stadium in Eugene. UCLA gets it done on the road, continues this pretty magical run for Chip Kelly, which I think is phenomenal. Is just great for the sport. Chip Kelly's just an interesting dude who entertains me. Mike Leach, I can't get enough of either one. Texas, Oklahoma State. Can Oklahoma State rebound? Texas is looking up and up with the Quinn Ewers. You know, he's doing his thing. Bijan Robinson, man. We're going to talk about Bijan Robinson in just a moment. But he's playing top-level football. I've said it since last season. Best running back in the country. Most talented back in the country. That should be another good game. I think Texas does beat Oklahoma State and continues Oklahoma State's now would be a two-game skid if they lose this weekend. But other than that, you know, I really wish Mississippi State would have won last weekend to make this Alabama clash even bigger. But Alabama, you know they're pissed off. You know, Nick Saban just ran them like Bear Bryant in Junction, you know, back in the day. Just ran, you know, that team was probably put through Hell Week. It was Hell Week in Alabama, I believe, after this loss from Tennessee. So Mississippi State is going to be on the receiving end of angry Nick Saban, which is never good. If Alabama... You know, I would love to go Mississippi State here, and I do think it's going to be a close game because I think Mississippi State will be able to score much better than they did against Kentucky this past weekend. But there's just Alabama doesn't lose two in a row. It just doesn't happen. Alabama doesn't lose two in a row. I don't see them losing to Mississippi State this week. And the last game we'll talk about, which is a very good clash. You know, you got Max Duggan, you got Adrian Martinez, Kansas State versus TCU, two of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12 right now playing some of the best ball. Kansas State is playing phenomenal football of late. They do have the one loss in the season, but that was kind of an anomaly. TCU looks to be, you know, like I said earlier, they got the stranglehold on the Big 12. So I do think TCU wins comfortably, but it will be an entertaining offensive game by both teams. TCU does get it done. They look like the real deal under Sonny Dykes leading the way. And that's the last game that we'll talk about for this upcoming weekend. It's not going to be as good as last week. It's not, unless some real crazy shit happens. Unless Iowa wins, Syracuse wins. Let's see. Iowa, Syracuse, and Mississippi State, and Kansas State. If they all win, all right, it's coming close to last weekend. Put that in a parlay. See if it hits. If it does, you're going to be rich, but it's not going to happen. But that's the only way we can compare to last week. All right, so moving on, we're going to go to now the Heisman, the updated Heisman watch list from this past weekend. Fortunately, it's, you know, this smell of wine is knocking me out. God, it's fucking mildew. I think it's just a bad bottle, maybe. I don't know. But we had C.J. Stroud was off. He had a bye week. Ohio State did not play. He's still going to be at the top of the mountain, though. He's just playing too good of football. He's putting up too good of numbers to not be at the top of the mountain. Hendon Hooker has solidified himself as the clear number two guy behind C.J. Stroud. And there is room to jump C.J. There is room to jump C.J. if he continues to play the way he is. But last week, 21 of 30, 385 yards, 5 touchdowns, did have one pick, but he had 56 yards rushing as well. And the biggest thing, he beat Alabama. He beat Alabama with explosive plays, efficient football, 21 of 30. That doesn't get much better than that. Hendon Hooker solidifying himself as a true, true Heisman favorite right there behind CJ. Next, we have Dorian Thompson-Robinson, UCLA. Had a bye. They were off. They were getting ready for this big Oregon clash, which, you know, give Chip Kelly an extra week. I think he's going to game plan well. I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Zach Charbonnet, they're going to come out fresh. I expect big numbers from Dorian Thompson-Robinson to justify his continued place on my Heisman list. And then we're going to end here with two running backs. Blake Corum, who is just... past 4 weeks have been just incredible. He's been playing out. In the past four games, he has 666 rush yards. I'm not sure if I like the 666 there. That could be a bad omen. That kind of scares me a little bit. I didn't even saying it out loud or typing it down on my stat sheet here. But 666 yards in four games. He leads the nation now with 13 touchdowns. He went 28 attempts for 166 yards and 2 TDs against the Penn State Nittany Lions in a manhandling affair. Blake Corum, number 4 on the Heisman watch list. And then, making a reappearance, it's hard to keep this man away. Bijan Robinson, 28 attempts, 135 yards on the day, 4 receptions, 36 yards in a big victory. He is now the only player in college football with 700-plus rushing yards, 200-plus receiving yards. He has 5 straight 100-yard games. You know, he's Bijan Robinson back in the fray. Texas back in the mix. And if they stay in the mix, Bijan Robinson will stay on the Heisman list. He's the best running back in all of college football. It's good to see not just all quarterbacks up here. It's good. I almost threw a defensive player in there. We'll have to see if he continues to play good football. I'll reveal him if he keeps it up. All right. So we have made it to the end of this week's episode. And as always, we end on the one thing that I hate, the one thing that, just bothers me. And it's not college football related. We don't do college football related here because I bitch and moan for the other 50 minutes of this podcast about bullshit. But the one thing that came to my mind this week, and it's actually been a pretty stress-free week. So I didn't have something that really stood out that I hate. But this, in the past, has caused me issues since I've been 16. I've had so many bad experiences with flat tires and specifically a slow leak in my tire. So what I mean is, like, you know, when you can just get by for a few days, then you can go fill it up. You know, what you should do is just go get a fucking new tire. That's what I should do always. I went this, I mean, I've done this multiple times in my entire life, but I went this past year for about 10 months where I had a slow leak in my tire. It actually was a nail that was in my tire. When I finally went and got my tire changed out and bought a new tire, I refused to buy all four new ones. I was like, no, I'm just getting this one because I'm cheap as fuck. And you would think this makes me sound lazy, but it actually involved more work doing this. So every like 2-3 days, I would have to consistently stop at the gas station and pump air into this tire constantly, multiple times a week, every couple of days. And I did that for 10 months. So is it the slow leak that I hate, or is it my procrastination? I don't know. We can lump them into one here, but yeah, that, oh my God, a slow leak in my tire. I hate it. I hate it because I don't know. I don't know if I'm too cheap, too lazy, but I never want to go get a new tire. And I just continue to fill it up, fill it up, fill it up. I become a regular at the gas station. You know, when people start to, you know your name and just, you know, identify you by the car at the gas station, you know, there's a problem. There was a problem. And I've done that in my time. Like I said, 16, I used to run out of gas all the time when I was younger, and I used to never want to fucking get a new tire. So I would always just, if I had a slow leak, fill it up every couple of days. And it's more work. It's more stressful. I remember driving down the road after, like, you know, if I didn't drive it for a couple of days, that thing was basically on the rim. Thank God the gas station is literally right around the corner. But I used to freak out. Talk about stress. And now, once I got it changed, man, my life is so much better. But you know what? I bet if I have a slow leak again, you know, you'll see me at that gas station twice a week, three times a week still. But there you have it. That's this week's episode of From the Basement Bar Podcast. Thanks again for listening. Hey, follow on Twitter @playbook_daily so you can get updates, know when we're releasing our latest episodes. Please give us a follow on Twitter @playbook_daily, DAILY. Yeah, I spelled that right. All right. Thank you for listening from the Basement Bar.